Adam Schein Podcast.
Yes, episode 27 of the Adam Schein Podcast, and we are extra fired up to be with you after incredible week number 3 in the National Football League. We have a tremendous guest on the podcast today, legendary New York City sports talk show host Mike Francesa is our featured guest on the Adam Schein Podcast. We'll talk about the inept Giants, the pathetic Jets, what's next for both franchises, go around the league with Mike Francesa. We've got tales of woe on fantasy football. We'll get into our piping hot picks against the spread with Bob Stew. Boy, Patty Mahomes, Lamar Jackson turned into Patrick Mahomes putting on an absolute display. I really thought of all the storylines from week number 3 in the National Football League and things to look out for and advance forward. There was nothing bigger and better than the performance of our guy Patrick Mahomes on Monday Night Football. Listen, that was a show, and you can't be surprised. Patrick Mahomes had this unbelievable knack of playing his best when the bright lights are on, when it matters the most. Mahomes was majestic. And look, we can debate names for MVP, and you can make the case, and I would right now, 3 weeks into the season, Russell Wilson is number one for MVP, followed by Aaron Rodgers, followed by Josh Allen. But never get it twisted. Best player in the NFL is Patrick Mahomes. Best quarterback in the NFL is Patrick Mahomes. The best player in all of sports is Patrick Mahomes. That's why he got a $450 million contract. That's why he is all everything for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I just loved, after he threw his fourth touchdown pass, where he looked at his fingers and counted 1, 2, 3, 4, shrugged his shoulders like Michael Jordan. Was it because he threw touchdown number 4? Was it because on the NFL Network rankings, he was listed as the 4th best player in the NFL, which is wild, which is crazy? It's always Patrick Mahomes number 1. I mean, this was awesome, and it's a harbinger of things to come. The 4 touchdowns, think about how dynamic and diverse they were for Patty Mahomes, right? You know, the first one, what a play design by Eric Bieniemy, who should be an NFL head coach, and by Andy Reid. You had Tyreek Hill in the backfield, and all eyes are on him, and Patty flips the ball to the fullback, Sherman, for a touchdown. How about the touchdown to the left tackle? A big man eligible, Eric Fisher. How about that incredible throw in the tight window to Tyreek Hill? I mean, that was just sensational. Then the bomb off the back foot to Hardman streaking down the field. Patrick Mahomes is majestic. He is just incredible to watch. And I thought, you know, ebb and flow of this game, you know, feels like the Chiefs won by 50 points. And this is kind of a big deal in terms of what's next here in the NFL. Look, you know, the marquee for this week reads Chiefs and the Patriots. Listen, the Kansas City Chiefs are going to win this game, and they're going to destroy the New England Patriots, and, you know, they're going to win the AFC, and they're going to win another Super Bowl, and the only question is, where's Mayor Q going to have the parade in Kansas City, Missouri? And this is a great team, and this is a dynasty. And we talked about it on Shine on Sports, on Mad Dog Sports Radio, throughout the entire offseason. Give Brett Veach credit, give Andy Reid credit. They kept the band together. They didn't nickel and dime Chris Jones or make him play on a franchise tag. And I said he was the second most important player in terms of winning championships. He had that strip sack right before halftime, and it was all sorts of awesome. So I love this. I was not surprised. I picked Kansas City to win the game. I was in the minority for members of the media. I couldn't believe that people, and I love the Ravens, couldn't believe people were picking against Patrick Mahomes on Monday Night Football. You know, they have Clyde Edwards-Helaire, drafted him in the first round. You know, he's Brian Westbrook and Andy Reid's offense, only better. I mean, get used to it in terms of Kansas City and Patty Mahomes, the sheer domination. They did it last year. You know, if Dee Ford was on the right side of the line of scrimmage, they would have made the Super Bowl Patty's first year. He was a starter the year he threw for 50 touchdowns. Oh, it is a show, and I am absolutely obsessed. On the flip side, you know, Lamar Jackson, 97 yards passing. Last week on radio, we made a huge deal about Lamar saying he wasn't playing Mahomes. He was only playing the Kansas City defense. You know, that's not the case. And that was cringe-inducing. And I made a big deal about that. Aaron Rodgers always talks about the quarterback he's facing. Got to outscore Drew Brees. Lamar Jackson needed to realize he needed to put up the points. And this is a big deal. He's now 0-3 against Kansas City. He said after the game, Kansas City's his kryptonite. You know, he looked like he did in the Tennessee playoff game. How about kicking a field goal on the first drive? And you could debate, you know, try for seven, put three on the board. The Ravens' DNA says seven. They always go for it. The analytics say seven. You're facing Mahomes. When Harbaugh put three on the scoreboard, I said, oh, boy, they're already spooked. That's not who they are. That's not what they do. So this loss and how they played, big deal. Huge in terms of home field for the playoffs. Huge in terms of the esteem for Baltimore. Look, I still think Baltimore is the second best team when you look at the landscape in the AFC. But Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Tennessee, they certainly have a gripe with that argument. I was very disappointed with Lamar Jackson's performance. Mark Andrews didn't exactly help him out. And if you listen to Lamar's commentary last week, you cannot be surprised. But remember this, and it's important, as we talk about different players, talk about different teams, rank MVP candidates, let Russ cook, and he was sensational covering up for his defense once again. Never get it backwards or twisted. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback and the best player in the NFL. On the other side, legendary sports talk show host Mike Francesa joins the Adam Schein podcast.
Hey, everyone. This is Kirk Morrissey.
This is Greg McElroy.
And this is Nate Burleson. With the 2020 NFL season finally upon us, we're excited to announce three new NFL podcasts from SiriusXM.
On Total Coverage, we'll explore the hows and the whys behind the week's biggest results.
On Inside the Pocket, we will go under the helmet for all the quarterbacks in the NFL.
And on 17 Weeks, Jamal Adams, Emmanuel Sanders, and Eric Ebron will discuss the latest NFL stories straight from the locker room.
New episodes of all three podcasts will be available every week on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, this is an absolute treat. Joining us right now on the Adam Schein podcast, legendary sports talk show host, the great Mike Francesa. Mike, how are you?
Good, Adam. How are you?
Doing excellent. Appreciate it. And listen, this is the first football season in decades where you haven't been on the radio and haven't been on WFAN. Football season always is that different kind of energy and cadence. Do you miss doing the radio show?
I do, a little bit. It's been a strange year anyway, obviously, with everything so crazy. You know, nothing's normal this year. So you have to take that into the whole recipe and the whole design of everything. I mean, to have all these events to, you know, overlap, where you have the Stanley Cup Finals one night and then a baseball playoff game the next night, then a football game the next day, and then, you know, NBA Finals the next night, then the Masters and the U.S. Open, all played within a couple of days of each other. It's a crazy, crazy time. It really is. But I'll tell you what I miss. I miss Mondays. One of the things I always loved was being able to come in and talk about the games the day after they were played. It was one of the most, and take the games apart, take the coaches apart, take everybody apart if I had to. It was always one of the real days I enjoyed. And what I would do is I would never on Monday listen before I went on, whether it was 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, whatever time it was. I didn't want to hear anybody else's take. I didn't want to know what anybody else said. I wanted to go in there fresh and just deliver what I had to say about the games. And I've always, going back to when I worked on the NFL Today, and that's in the late 70s and 1980s, I've always been, that's always been a day that's set apart. I start watching games at 1 o'clock. I don't stop watching games until now, obviously midnight. I watch every game. I still do. I watch with multiple TV sets. I still do. And I've done it that way. I got spoiled early, long before DirecTV and the Sunday Ticket. I got spoiled having all the games at my disposal, working at the NFL Today, and got very used to that. So when I left there, I missed that. And then the Sunday Day Ticket, obviously, which was one of the greatest inventions in the history of television, that changed everything at home for everybody. And I do. To me, Football Sunday is very special. Although what I've seen this year in New York would turn your stomach more than anything else.
I mean, it's grotesque, Mike. So I want to give you the floor. I mean, these are the two worst teams right now in the NFL. They're setting football back decades.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people, including something I saw that you said, that you thought Jacksonville would win, and none of us thought they'd win that first game, and they did come back to earth with their play against the Dolphins. I thought maybe Jacksonville, maybe Carolina could be as bad as the Jets or Giants. I thought the Jets and Giants would come nowhere near six wins, either one. I thought the Giants would open 0-5. I still do. And when you open 0-5, I've always been a believer that if you're a marginal team or an improving team, or hoping you're an improving team, how you play in the first 4 weeks is imperative, because players buy in. Players are selfish. They buy in. Coaches buy in. If you open 3-1 when you're not a good team, it's an extra 3 or 4 wins in that season. If you open 0-4 and maybe you were an 8-win team, you might wind up being a 4-win team, because players start worrying about themselves. They worry about where they're going to play next year. Coaches are thinking about where they're going to coach next year. Assistant coaches are looking to get out. Head coaches are expecting to get fired. So the NFL, more than anything else, it impacts what you do those first couple of weeks. Teams that jump out quick will have bigger seasons. Teams that get off slowly will have very, very rough seasons.
Dave Gettleman, to me, is the problem with the Giants. The Giants have had the worst record in football since the start of the 2017 season. How Gettleman got the job, I'll never know. Everything he's done has been wrong. The Giants are inept. They don't have talent. They lost to the 49ers backups. What do you see when you watch the Giants?
Well, anyone who's listened to me or followed me knows I was against the Gettleman hire. I couldn't believe he got hired.
Yeah.
I have been on his back the whole time. He completely hit my attacking him completely ended my relationship. I've had a great relationship with the Giants. He ended that because I had gone to camp every year and done a show from camp every year of my entire career until 2 years ago when he refused to meet with me and come on the show. And the Giants invited me that day, to their credit. They invited me and they said, "We'll give you the John. We'll give you players, but Gettleman won't do it." And I said, "Listen, I'm not bringing the show there if the general manager doesn't have the ability or at least the toughness to handle some questions." I said, "Let him fight me off. Let him say whatever he wants, but come on the show. I'm bringing the show there. We're the flagship for the Giants." He can't not show. And he refused to go on the air, which said to me so much about him. I don't mind a guy. And listen, Shermer quit me last year. And it's not, you know, it's not surprising that the guys who quit our show as coaches, who couldn't follow through the season, whether it's myself or Dog and myself, none of them completed the year ever. Anyone who ever quit the show, and it was 4 times, they never completed the season. Just to show you how sometimes mental toughness, just the ability to go out there and battle and express yourself. That's all it takes. All we're trying to do is get to the bottom of stuff. You can battle us off. You can tell us we're wrong. George Young used to come on and fight with us. It was some of the great stuff of all time. David Stern, same way. David Stern would be, "I'll teach you a lesson," okay? Well, George would come on like he was a school teacher and yell at us. We love that. Don't run away. I mean, don't run away. Argue your point. Tell us if we don't agree with how you're building the team. Tell us why you're right and we're wrong. And I thought his running and hiding said everything about him. The Giants have allowed him to treat the media like garbage. He has not even shown up and done his duty as a general manager in front of the media. He's gotten away with that. And how he still has a job is amazing to me. Now, listen, I don't want anyone ever to lose their job. And I have a complete empathy for him having been sick. So this has nothing to do with that. This has to do with football. Mm-hmm. I just think he has done a terrible job. And I said this. I said it after year one. I said it every minute he's been there. The Giants will never win until he's gone.
Yeah, we're on the exact same page. He should never even been considered to be the general manager of the Giants, let alone hired, let alone be given the keys to the car year after year after year.
The Giants used to be smarter than this, Adam. They were
That's
smarter.
Right.
And I think there's reasons for this. And one of the reasons that I believe, and I've stated this, and I know that it has annoyed them, I don't think the Tisch and Mara relationship is anywhere near what it was when it was Wellington and Bob. I think the relationship is frayed, and I think that has hurt them, as that they're not on the same page.
Well, Mike, and to that point, I mean, they've been all over the map ever since, you know, they get rid of Coughlin, they kept Reese. You saw the disaster with McAdoo and, you know, everything that happens with keeping Gettleman and, you know, bringing on Joe Judge. And now they're going to have to get rid of the GM, and you're going to have a GM come in and inherit a head coach. I mean, you know, this is what we used to make fun of the Cleveland Browns for. The Giants were never like this. They
never.
Were a model franchise
never.
For so long.
Listen, the Giants had a time in the 70s when they were awful. And this reminds me of the 70s. That's how bad football is. There was a time when the Jets and Giants were this bad. But that's how far back you have to go. And here's the thing. In those days, Wellington and Tim Mara couldn't agree what day of the week it was. Okay,
right.
They couldn't agree on anything. They just could not. You couldn't put them in the same room. Finally, Roselle had enough of it. He put in George Young. George Young put in Perkins, who then took off for Alabama. We know what George did, and then he hired Parcells. He stayed with Parcells when he was going to hire Howard Snellenberger. Luckily, Snellenberger told Bill about it because they had the same agent. Bill went on to stay and become great. Jay went on to having great success. Wellington hired Coughlin against Ernie Accorsi's wishes. Ernie didn't want Coughlin. Coughlin wins two more Super Bowls. So they've had a great run. The bottom line is now they are completely, again, separated. They don't have one way of thinking. I think Tisch has one way. It's always been Tisch business, Mara football, but I think that's not direct lines anymore. I think there is give and take both ways now, and I think they are not on the same page, and their decision-making has been very poor. Now, I don't know Judge from a hole in the wall, okay? I don't know him. I've never met him. I don't know a lot about him. I mean, I know where he came from and stuff like that, but I don't know if he's going to be a good coach or a bad coach. I don't know yet. I thought people started to fall in love with him a little too fast, to be honest with you. He might be good. I don't know. I can't tell yet. I don't know if he's going to be Les Steckel or he's going to be a really good taskmaster. I don't know who he's going to be, okay? I have no idea. But I'll tell you right now, he's going to have a lot more days like he had on Sunday because they don't have a lot of talent right now. And they, you know, the folly is go look at how many bad agents they've brought in and how many guys they brought in as stopgaps who made no sense. And look how high they have drafted and come away with question marks. I mean, it is crazy the way they've run that franchise.
Yeah, and that goes back to Gettleman. You're absolutely right. When you look at the Jets situation, how much blame do you put on Adam Gase?
Adam Gase is a very hard guy to figure. I was very puzzled when he got the job. I used to talk to McCagnan. McCagnan used to call me. Now, McCagnan was an odd guy. He didn't give anybody any extra favor. He never gave me a scoop, but he used to call and pick my brain. Okay, I can say that now.
Mm-hmm.
He calls me and I said, you need a veteran coach. And he says, I think they did try to hire, they were interested in the guy from Carolina, but he didn't want to come there. Okay, all right, they were interested in him. They were interested in Mike McCarthy very strongly, but the Packers killed Mike McCarthy, killed him. Okay.
Meaning that they wouldn't hire him because of that PR debacle, so to say?
It was a character assassination that got the ball, Mike McCarthy, okay?
He was the guy.
But McCarthy really was interested in the job. And then they came up with Gase, and I was puzzled by the whole Gase thing. I just never understood it. When I watched Gase in Miami, I thought he was a peculiar coach. I didn't think he was automatically bad. I didn't think he was automatically good. I thought he was an odd coach. Here, I can't figure out what he's doing. It seems like some days he hasn't even prepared the team to play. It seems like some days he's actually trying to lose. I mean, sometimes some of the things they've done, first of all, we know Gase. Let's be fair to Gase. Gase didn't want some of this personnel. He did not want Bell under any circumstances.
Nope.
You know that. Okay. Nope. He doesn't like Bell. He didn't want Bell. I didn't think Bell made any sense. First of all, I don't ever want anybody else's running backs. I want rookie running backs. I want young running backs. I don't want anybody else's running backs ever. I'm a 6-year plan running back guy. I want them all with fresh legs. I want them all out of college. I don't want anybody's running backs ever. So, and I don't want to pay for them. I didn't understand the Gase hiring. McTagnan, in retrospect, was not the right guy for the job. The Johnsons, though, don't know what they're doing. Let's just put it bluntly. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to do it. They had the right coach. Now, let me put it this way. They should never have done anything to Mangini. But to be fair, Eric was his own worst enemy. Eric tried to tell the owner things that you can't tell the owner. You got to remember, he's the owner. And Eric did some things that he had to grow up. But it's too bad, because Eric, when you look at it, Eric won 10 games, 9 games in 3 years and got fired. He was on the right page. He was building a good team, except he was immature. And he did some things that were bad. And he knows they were mistakes. And then he jumped into a second job in a bad situation. And that ruined his career, because it's too bad. If Eric Mangini could get another chance, he'd be a really good head coach. He really should have been the guy who was the big winner there, because he was the right guy, but he did stupid things. And, you know, the owner has the right to be the owner. And I can't blame Woody. You know what? You can't talk to the owner the way he tried to talk to the owner. It just doesn't work.
Sam Darnold. I love the kid. I wish he had anything around him. I mean, right now he's making bad decisions. The line, I mean, Becton is, I think, going to be a great player, but, you know, it's not exactly the Washington Hogs from the mid-'80s. No receivers. Coach doesn't like Bell. Bell is not healthy. You know, I'm a big Sam Darnold believer, Mike, but we haven't seen anything. And the Jets could end up being on the clock when this thing is all said and done. What's your take on Sam Darnold? And do you think the Jets would consider Trevor Lawrence if they got the number one overall pick?
Listen, I don't think there's any question. There's nobody playing at the bottom on a bottom team who's going to stand in the way of Lawrence. Lawrence will run over them like they are standing still and they just got hit by a train, okay? Everybody is taking this kid. This kid is a can't-miss. This is John Elway. This is Peyton Manning. This is can't-miss football player. Everybody is taking him. I don't care what team it is, Giants, Jets, whoever, they are taking this quarterback. If they don't, they'll be the dumbest team for 10 years, okay? So anybody who has a chance to take this player is taking him. That's not even an issue. It's not even a question. The team that trades him will never live it down. That will not happen. And I don't know which team's going to wind up, because who knows who's going to come away with that record. You know that. I mean, you know how hard that is.
Of course.
I mean, look at Jacksonville. They already won a game. None of us thought they'd win a game in week one. I mean, so they already won a game. So you just never know. But here's the thing. Here's the thing about Sam. I like Sam. I always like Sam. I like Sam in college. He's not a typical USC quarterback. But that doesn't mean that what's around him can't destroy him. Any young quarterback can be destroyed by the culture and by the level of talent around him. And Sam is right now about to be destroyed. And listen, I think the one thing that will happen is, if you ask me 3 or 4 years from now, do I think Sam Darnold will be playing some year where and starting in the NFL? I do. Do I think it'll be with the Jets? Not if they have a chance at Lawrence. No, they'll take Lawrence and get rid of Sam. There's not even a question. But I think Sam will have an NFL career. I do not think he'll be a bust. I do not think he'll be a backup. He's only played a handful of games. He has shown glimpses of really good stuff. But the way he's playing now cannot be defended. The balls he's throwing now cannot be defended. He's getting into the typical terrible habits that every quarterback put in those situations will fall into. I don't care who you are as a young quarterback. I've seen great young quarterbacks. Go back and look at how Troy Aikman played as a rookie. God, you couldn't have had a worse rookie, okay? I mean, and he's Troy Aikman. Any rookie can look that bad, or a second-year player can look that bad. It takes years to learn the NFL. Yes, Mahomes is a gifted player, but the level of sophistication of that offense and how much talent he has around him is unbelievable. So that's why it's a perfect fit. And that happens from time to time, okay? Good for him. But Sam Darnold came in and it was there, okay? There's no question it was there. He's a good kid. I know him a little bit. He's a good kid. I don't know Jones at all. Jones throws the ball better than I thought he did. but he is a turnover machine.
Okay? Oh,
until that stops, he won't improve. He's got a good arm, and he's a better athlete than I thought he was at Duke. I only saw him a couple times at Duke. I saw him where he had one really big game. I didn't really pay attention to him, to be honest with you. He's got a pretty good throwing arm. He really does. But he is a turnover machine. That has to change in this league. You cannot be a turnover-plagued quarterback and survive. But I think Sam can be successful, but I think things have to change. The question I have is, do they have anybody there who can run the offense if they fire, if they decide to oust Gase after, let's say, next Thursday night? You know they'll make Williams the head coach, but do they have anybody on the offensive side who can run the franchise from an offensive standpoint? You can say no one's running it now. Look at the level of the Jets' offensive talent. Beckton's going to be an all-pro. He's going to be a fixture. He's going to be a franchise offensive lineman, unless he gets hurt or eats himself out of the league. He's going to be a franchise offensive tackle. I don't think there's any question about it. He's the real thing. That's a keeper. He's already the best player on the team. But I don't know if Sam will survive. I really don't. And if you have a chance at Lawrence, nobody will survive.
Yeah, no, you have to draft Trevor Lawrence. I'm with you. I mean, I've been told that, you know, just from a scouting perspective, John Elway, Andrew Luck, and Trevor Lawrence. Those are the three, right?
Same level. You're talking – see, remember, Peyton Manning never had that arm strength, okay? So he's never on that level. You're talking Elway. You're talking Luck. You're talking about can't miss superstar player.
Yeah, he's an absolute no-brainer. All right, well, Mike, put this on the record because I'm curious to get your take, and you referenced the offensive staff for the Jets. You know, as we tape this on a Tuesday afternoon, Brett Rypien is apparently going to start for the Broncos at quarterback. If he beats the Jets, should they fire Adam Gase?
I think they will. I think the Jets have always been cognizant of the media. They've always been cognizant of the fans. They will throw one to the alligators rather than get eaten whole. They will sacrifice him at the altar. They also have a guy there who, as an interim, was successful, okay, and wants to be a head coach. You know how Williams is? Williams is the type of coach that if you meet him, and I don't know him well, but he's got the same kind of take that you have. There's a certain assistant who, when you meet him, they think they're better than everybody, okay? They think they're, yeah. And they are really good coaches. He's a good football coach. You know, just like you'll meet a certain special teams coach who just knows he's really good. Listen, he's good at what he does. There's no question. He knows how to coach defense, but he's got to let someone coach the offense. They'll let him coach the team. I don't think they have a problem with that. I think they're worried about, do they have anybody who can run the offense? That's the question on that staff. Is there anybody capable of running the offense?
You tweeted something about Odell Beckham Jr. and a potential trade. What can you tell us about that with Cleveland?
I shouldn't have done that because what happened is the guy got mad at me because I don't break stories or anything.
No, no.
I was talking to someone who told me after week one, I have friends in the league, both as coaches and as general managers, and they told me, hey, I got a call from Cleveland. They wanted a lot, though. Okay, those calls go on all the time, okay? I shouldn't have said it because I didn't realize it would. I can still cause a fuss that way. And the guy said to me, hey, what are you doing? I said, you know what? You didn't tell me it was off the record. I didn't even think about it. I apologize. So I apologized to him because he just mentioned to me in passing, hey, you know, the Browns called me. You know, it looks like they may be shopping Beckham, but they wanted a real lot for him. I said, well, they, you know, guys do that all the time. That happens all the time in sports. That doesn't mean a guy is going to get traded. It really doesn't. We all know that hasn't been a happy situation there. Beckham's the kind of guy who's always looking for his next team. He's always looking for his next situation. He's always looking to, for him, the grass is always going to be greener somewhere else. I'm not getting the ball enough. I'm not loved enough. I'm not this, I'm not that. And let's be honest, he hasn't been highly productive there. He really hasn't.
No. No.
But that goes on all the time. I shouldn't have done that because I didn't talk to anybody in Cleveland. I talked to someone Cleveland talked to, and it wasn't even what we were talking about. They just mentioned it to me. I probably shouldn't have done it, so I wish I never did because I didn't mean to cause a thing with that. That happens all the time. A lot of guys get talked about, especially when teams are really worried about whether they made the right decision with different players. And, hey, not, that would never surprise me if he got moved. There's about 20 guys you can put in the same category. I think they'd be wrong to move him. I think they need to work with him. And you know what? I wish the Giants had learned to work with him. If the Giants had ever disciplined him, they would have had a heck of a player. Same thing with Shockey. They ruined Shockey. They ruined Beckham. If they had disciplined either one of them when they first came here, they would have had careers. But here's the amazing thing. Beckham one day is going to wake up and say, you know what? I knocked Eli Manning. My whole career was with Eli Manning. With Eli Manning, I had the best three years of anybody who ever played football the first 3 years at wide receiver. Go look at Beckham's numbers with Eli Manning. They were unbelievable.
Yeah, they really were. You're 100% right about that. How about Dan Quinn? Mike, how the hell does this guy still hold a job?
Don't get me started. My son, Jack, has always been a Julio Jones freak. He wears number 11. He plays football. Okay, he happens to be a running back, but he wears 11 when he plays. He loves Julio Jones. He's a huge Falcon fan. I'll never forget him in tears when they blew the lead to the Pats. Okay, he was actually in tears. Okay, I never saw anything. I made the comment about two games in my life where I said if they had locked the coaches in a room at that point in the game, the team wins the game. That was five slammer jammer against NC State. Okay, if they had taken the coach off the court with 7.5 minutes left, Houston wins going away, all right, because they pull the ball out and make it a free throw shooting contest. And then what happened with Dan Quinn and Falcons, there was not a way. If you take one play out of that game in the Super Bowl, one play, that game cannot be redone. One single play. If they just run one play the right way, that game is over. This game on past Sunday, if you look, they didn't make one single play in the last 7 minutes on either side of the ball. If they made one play, they win the game. Only one. One third down stop. One running play that's successful. One first down. They couldn't do anything right. They missed tackles. They missed assignments. They've done this now three or four times with an offense. You know that at 0-3, he's got some of the greatest quarterback stats of all time for an 0-3
player. Of all time,
all time. Hey, I know Arthur Blank. He's a gentleman. He's a nice man. All right, I've known him for a while. He has more patience than Job, because I'll tell you something. I couldn't have kept the coach. I couldn't have kept him after the Super Bowl. I could not have kept him after how many times he's done this. This is four times where he has had catastrophic collapses. They have turned this into it's now the Falcons. They do this regularly.
That's
they
right.
They do it regularly. It's ridiculous. How are they 0-3?
Listen, I thought Matt Ryan was going to be the offensive player of the year this year. And to your point, he's put up these unbelievable numbers. I mean, it's insane, Mike.
And the Cleveland Browns are 3-0. They could be 0-3 with one bounce of a ball in each game. They could be 0-3.
It's wild. It is wild. You think Drew Brees is shot?
Yes, completely shot. And I think Sean knows it. I'm telling you, two things about watching the Saints. Number one, he can't throw the ball down the field at all. At all. His pass plays that are successful are thrown 4 yards, 5 yards. He will not even look down the field anymore. It is unbelievable. It's not even the same player. And they are now the new Raiders. They find ways to screw themselves on penalties worse than any team I've ever seen. You know that? They are haunted. They have committed so many bad penalties in the season already. Go back and look, and I know you watch everything. Back and look at how many bad plays they've made on penalties, and they got screwed at least three times. You know, I think that they're talking out and wanting to file lawsuits and being the victims and everything have made them very unpopular with the Zebras. And don't tell me for years the Raiders didn't get screwed by the officials. I think now the Saints and Peyton get screwed by the officials all the time.
What is the official? Well, tell me what was the official Mike Francesa Super Bowl pick before the season, and after 3 weeks, whatever it was, if you're still feeling it, Mike.
It was Kansas City repeat.
Yep.
Absolutely. I was at totally the game last year. My youngest son, Harrison, is a Chiefs fan. I took him to the game. Took Jack, took Julio, who was a Niner fan, to the game. So I had a Niner fan and a Chiefs fan with me at the game in Miami. Drove from my house in Palm Beach. We all went to the game together. So my youngest son, who is a huge Chiefs fan, so and has been for years. So I think they win again. I'll tell you this. Their biggest threat is not Baltimore. Baltimore is not made with that quarterback to play in the matchup against Kansas City. It's not right for them. They can kill every bad team. They can't play teams that can get them in third and long in big spots. They're just not good enough to do that. They're not going to beat Kansas City in a big spot. I think the biggest threat to Kansas City, without any question, is going to be Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's got the best defensive personnel in the league, especially brilliant front seven and defensive personnel. And I think if Roethlisberger is ready and all those wide receivers get like Johnson and Schuster and everybody gets has a good season, I think Pittsburgh is the biggest threat to keeping Kansas City out of the Super Bowl. I don't think anybody else in the AFC is a threat. On the NFC side, I was really torn as to who it was. I thought before the injuries that San Francisco could repeat. Mm-hmm. I thought it could be a repeat game this year. I thought New Orleans was too old. I'm not in love with Green Bay, although I think clearly the quarterback is playing very motivated. He's in great shape. They look really good. I don't think they're as good as everybody's making them out to be right now. I think the NFC is wide open. I don't see a great team in the NFC right now. I really don't. But I think now the San Francisco injuries are very, very going to be tough to deal with. So I think the NFC is absolutely 6 or 7 team wide open. But I think the champion this year, again, will be the Chiefs.
Totally agree. Mike, you're the best. This was a blast. This was so much fun. We always appreciate the time, and I'm glad you're enjoying retirement, enjoying the football season, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Take care. Keep up the good work. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it. The great Mike Francesa. That was as good as it gets.
Your home for all things combat sports is SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156. Start your day with Hall of Fame Pro Wrestling Talk on Busted Open.
All you need is a moment to get somebody over.
Then the Ock and Barak Show keeps you updated on all things boxing.
Let's not say that Canelo hasn't fought anybody or fighting guys on the way up.
And Jimmy Smith has you covered for mixed martial arts.
Do you want to look behind the curtain and see what these guys have to deal with for the amount of money they're making?
The fight game broken down like nowhere else. Only on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Adam Schein, fantasy football legend.
Well, as Bob Stew, our senior executive producer of Schein on Sports and the Adam Schein podcast, joins me, maybe I was getting a little bit too cocky in terms of fantasy because week 3 was a failure. The Schein kids lost, and it was a mess. You know, Lamar Jackson's our quarterback, and we ended up losing by 6 to the Diving Board Assassins. Why the Diving Board Assassins? Because my guy Shiffy, one of our friends who is at the place that we swim, the club that we swim at, last year he was doing a cannonball off the diving board and he broke the diving board. That's why his team name is the Diving Board Assassins. That's a pretty tremendous team name. He had Tyreek Hill, he had Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and next thing you know, the Schein kids couldn't get it done. We have J.K. Dobbins as our number 2 running back. Baltimore should be playing him as their featured back. We've said that forever. I got Deontay Johnson and CeeDee Lamb, who we drafted. Brandon Ayuk, they're on the bench now. So, you know, we got to make a trade. So the Schein kids lost, which was unfortunate. And Bob Stew, 20 people in our daily fantasy league for DraftKings. And with the friends from town, and I finished 16th out of 20. Oh. After 2 fifth-place finishes, 107 points. This was pathetic. Deontay Johnson got hurt. All right. Drew Sample, who I loved at tight end, had 1 point. And you know all I do on radio is destroy the Giants. I took the Giants thinking, all right, they're cheap. They'll give me like 5 points, 6 points. They're facing Nicky Mullins. -2 points, Bob Stew, for the Giants in Daily Fantasy.
Yeah, I'm really not surprised. You never should have taken the Giants on defense. You should have listened to me, Adam. I told you Allen Robinson was going to have a monster day. 123 yards, a touchdown. I also tried to tell you, Dallas. Go with Dallas. You were going to convince with Michael Gallup. You should have played Michael Gallup in Daily Fantasy, Adam. You're definitely right about that. Look, I struggled also in fantasy. Last year, I finished second in the Shine On Sports Fantasy League with all the great callers we have in that league. Right now, I'm 0-3. I'm 0-3 in the Shine On Sports Fantasy League. Lamar Jackson last night, all he had to do was outperform Tyreek Hill. He did not. I end up losing.
Yeah, we had the same thing. Unbelievable.
Absolutely. The exact same thing. I mean, I also struggled last week in DraftKings too, Adam. You know, I liked Phillip Rivers versus the Jets. The game was so lopsided. He sat the entire
quarter. It's crazy.
The defense scored all the points. I like Kyler Murray, too, at quarterback. I thought either or would have been good. He didn't have a great game either. So, yeah, I mean, we got a rebound here, Adam. I feel like we can rebound.
No, we can and we will. And, by the way, I played Murray and played Hopkins, and they were good. I was just annoyed, though, because, you know, I love Josh Allen. I could have played him. You know, I like my thought process. I started Devin Singletary. He was good. Sanders was good. Taylor was good, but they weren't great. I mean, he didn't even play Taylor in the fourth quarter. It was so lopsided. CeeDee Lamb, only 11. And, you know, I share this daily fantasy team with my buddy Stone, my childhood best friend. I tried to throw him off the team because I fill out the lineup anyway, right? You know, last year for the money, we did 50-50. I'm like, I don't need you to contribute in terms of the money. I'm making the lineup changes. It was Stone's birthday last Friday, so we went out to dinner with our wives, which we always do on his birthday. So his one contribution was, don't play the Giants. I'm like, yeah, I know, the Giants suck. And he's a big Jets fan. He's like, just don't play the Giants. So all day he's blowing up my phone. How'd you play the Giants? I'm like, you don't have to pay for the league. You're officially out. I mean, I got Stone just crushing me based upon that stupid Giants pick. By the way, my buddy Nick, who's in this league, he started Allen Robinson. Why? Because of you on the podcast. He texted me on Sunday. He said, it's all thanks to Bob. It was just in my brain to start Allen Robinson. So nice job, Bob. Maybe I should pay more attention to your recommendations.
Yeah, I appreciate Nick listening to the podcast. I appreciate him actually listening. I've got some good ones this week too, Adam. I really do. I feel like this is going to be a good week for both of us. No, I'm looking at a specific stack. It might surprise you. I'm going with the Miami Dolphins. The Seahawks secondary, Adam, is so terrible. They're allowing 430 passing yards per game. Now, look, some of that's because they played Dallas, they played Atlanta, they played New England the first 3 weeks. But most of it is just because they're not any good. The secondary is pretty terrible. By the way, Jamal Adams now has a groin injury. That means they might be even worse defensively. You got to look at the Dolphins here. Fitzpatrick, 5,400. Devontae Parker, 5,700. Mike Gesicki, 5,100. That gives you plenty of money to spread the wealth around. And that's what I'm looking at this week for the Dolphins. Who are you looking at this week for draft?
You know what's interesting, Bob? Your idea is brilliant. I was thinking of trying to find a lower end quarterback stack. I was thinking the Rams with Jared Goff, maybe Goff and Bob Woods or Goff and Higbee, because some of these top end running backs are just must plays. I mean, Alvin Kamara's facing the rebuilding since 1957 Detroit Lions. Aaron Jones is taking on the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, you know, those are must plays. I think the only other obvious stack, and it's not cheap, would be to go with Aaron Rodgers, who I think is a six quarterback in terms of price. Rodgers and Jones. But I think this is one of those weeks where for daily fantasy, you don't mess around when it comes to running backs. There are some decent, I don't want to say sleepers, but some value plays at wide receiver. You took one of mine with Parker. He's very high on my list. You know, I think that Brandon Ayuk, using him this week at $5,000, you know, Kyle Shanahan loves him. He makes a ton of sense. And how about Emmanuel Sanders going up against Detroit? We'll have to see if Michael Thomas is back or not. But for $4,800, you know, that Lions defensive backfield is dreadful. I could see Emmanuel Sanders being a solid play as well.
I don't know about Emmanuel Sanders, though, Adam. Breeze hasn't really targeted him as much as you'd hope. Traquan Smith's actually looked okay in the Saints offense, but I agree with you 100%, by the way, with Kamara. If you can afford him, he's $8,000. I think you can get similar productivity, though, if you go with Dalvin Cook. He's facing the Texans. Texans' rushing defense is atrocious. It's one of the worst in the NFL. Dalvin Cook looked unbelievable against the Titans last week. You finally saw that with Minnesota. They broke out. You know, another play I like at wide receiver, Odell Beckham Jr. is only 5,800. I know Odell Beckham Jr. has not played well this year. He's getting a terrible Cowboys secondary. Odell Beckham Jr., he owns the Cowboys secondary. I mean, you mentioned the Lions. You mentioned the Lions-Saints game. I like that to be a high-scoring game. Kenny Golladay at $6,000. He's getting a Saints defense. They couldn't cover Alan Lazard. How are they going to cover Kenny Golladay? That's why I really like the Dolphins. It kind of gives you endless possibilities. That's why I'm liking Miami in terms of that stack. Who are you liking in terms of defense? Oh, you can't possibly like the Giants again. You can't do that.
No. I'll never play the Giants again. And it's funny because last week I loved Indy. I'm like, I can't play Indy. I mean, it's too high of a number, 3,500, I believe. And then, of course, they score all those touchdowns. You know, part of the problem this week when it comes to defense, there's not a defense that's under $3,000 that I love. So I think you almost have to look at the higher level in terms of some potential plays here. I'll give you one, and you know, just for reality and fantasy, how about the Buccaneers? They're going against the Chargers. First road start for Justin Herbert, who you know that I love. The Buccaneers, 3,400, I think is a solid play this week.
Yeah, and especially when you saw Herbert struggle against the Panthers, I think that's a great idea going with the Bucs. I just think you should just go back to the well. I mean, the Colts are the highest scoring defense in the NFL right now. They face Nick Foles and the Bears. The Bears' offense is not that good. Even with Nick Foles, I think they're a pretty safe bet at 3,300. I think I would go with the Colts again, Adam. I think that's the play for defense this week.
I can't deal with another bad week, though. We got to make a trade. It's not easy making trades in fantasy football. You know, there's now in my kids' league, there are no more 3-0 teams. The 2-0 teams, including ours, all lost. So we got to find a way to make a trade. That's got to be next year. But I'll tell you, these daily leagues, I am absolutely obsessed. I get so amped during the week making the lineup. I feel miserable when, you know, I got the Giants defense. The NFL is just piping hot. I can't get enough. Coming up next, we'll give you a peek into our NFL picks against the spread on the Adam Schein Podcast.
Hey, everybody, this is Fran Freshella, host of the podcast World of Basketball. The game of basketball has truly become a global game.
Markovic buys it into Mickey, and somehow it goes in.
Each week, I talk with the players, coaches, and executives who have led the way in growing the game of basketball around the world.
Real Madrid have stolen victory from the jaws of defeat.
Episodes are available every Thursday on the SiriusXM app, Pandora, and Apple Podcasts.
Adam Schein, not telling you to wager on football, but here we go.
Well, the jinx has officially been reversed. Bob Stew won a Thursday night bet, won Thursday night against the spread. He picked the Miami Dolphins. Now, I did change my pick on radio. Well, I actually changed it in real time on the podcast last week because Bob Stew was going to go with the Miami Dolphins, and, you know, I couldn't pick them. So now all bets are off. Bob Stew, by the way, on the season, even Steven, 23-23-2. He went 8-8 last week. I had a couple of failures that were loud failures with the Raiders over the Patriots, the Cowboys over Seattle, but I've been on fire. 9-7 this past week, 28-18-2. Picking every NFL game against the spread. Bob Stew is not only our senior executive producer, he's also a huge fan of the Jets. Bob, the Denver Broncos and Jeffrey Eugene Driscoll. I have no idea if that's his middle name, but if not, it should be. The Jeff Driscoll-led Broncos take on your pathetic, embarrassing Jets. Denver is favored by 3. Who you got?
Yeah, you know I picked the Jets pretty well in recent years, Adam. I'm already 3-0 this year against the spread, picking against the Jets every single time. But this is the classic Jets situation. Adam Gase about to get fired. Everybody thinks Sam Darnold's broken. People are already buying Trevor Lawrence Jets jerseys. Come on, the Jets are going to win this game outright. This is just classic Jets. But the Jets defense is actually pretty mediocre. You saw a number like 36 put up against them last week by the Colts. you kind of forget there were two pick sixes in that game. The game was over. The offense was really contributing to the downfall of that game, not the defense. Look, you already mentioned it. Jeff Driscoll, he's a starting quarterback. Maybe. I don't know if he's going to be the quarterback. It might be Brett Rypien. I have no idea who they're going to play. Greg Williams eats bad quarterbacks alive. He'll put together a decent game plan. This is going to be so ugly, Adam. Think 17-14, but the Jets, they're going to win the game outright.
You're picking the Jets to win a football game.
Absolutely.
Wow. I mean, I'm stunned. You are, you know, Mr. Jets. You're colored in green. Cut you open. Your blood is green. Bob, I mean, I think that's good news. And you know that I like Sam Darnold, but he's got nothing around him because I'm taking the Broncos. I mean, why wouldn't I take the Broncos? I mean, Adam Gase, he can't coach his way out of a paper bank. So the fact that you're picking the Jets to win a football game is actually wild to me. I mean, the Denver Broncos have at least been competitive, even with Jeff Driscoll as the quarterback. You know, Melvin Gordon at least is a healthy, legit NFL running back. I am stunned by that development. I'll tell you, I think the best bet of the week is the LA Rams. Favored by 12.5 against the Giants. I mean, I don't know what the spread would have to be. 28? 29 for me to pick the Giants? I couldn't circle the LA Rams fast enough.
Can you believe I actually picked the Giants last week to beat the 49ers?
No.
I picked the Giants. Yeah, I picked them to win outright. That was easily the most embarrassing pick of the year for me. I don't even think
I'll be honest. I don't even remember you picking them to win outright. I knew you took them with the points. You picked them outright?
I just thought the Niners injuries had caught up to them. I thought the Giants could at least put something together.
Bob,
I didn't expect Nick Mullins and the Niners to put up 36 on the Giants. I mean,
it's
that was
Kyle
incredible.
Shanahan.
We've seen Kyle Shanahan struggle without Garoppolo. He was, I think he's 4-20 without Jimmy G with a different quarterback. Yeah, I mean, I was dead wrong. I agree with you here. I think the Rams are probably going to win this game by at least 20 points. I mean, 12, 12 and a half, 13. I mean, why even bother? It's going to be at least 20 points. I agree with you. I love the Rams as well. You know, there's another game that I has my eye. I mean, even though Tom Brady has left the Patriots, there's a ton of juice behind Kansas City, New England. I mean, look, what Mahomes just did to the Ravens, I don't think that bodes well for the Patriots. Right now, Adam, the line, Kansas City's favored by a touchdown. What are you thinking for that game?
Kansas City. No hesitation. Kansas City. I think the Chiefs are going to be able to take care of business and win that game by 10, 13 points. And, you know, I think Chris Jones and that defense, they're going to make a huge statement in this one. In addition to Patty, I mean, look, he's going to throw for four touchdowns again. I mean, the weapons, is you can't have one of those games you say Belichick takes away what you do best. What are you going to do? Take away Tyreek Hill? All right, throw to Kelce. Throw to Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of the backfield. Throw to Hardman. Throw to Watkins. I just don't think the Patriots can keep up with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I agree with you in some sense. Though the Chris Jones groin injury, he tweaked it. I don't necessarily know what his status is going to be coming up. That would really worry me for the Chiefs defense. Without Chris Jones, I might hesitate a lot more. Look, you've seen Mahomes. He's torched Belichick's defenses in the second half, the last two times they've played. The Chiefs get out to a fast start, it could be a blowout. I just think the Patriots are going to be in the game, though. I mean, Belichick always devises a great first half plan versus Kansas City. He never gets embarrassed. I think the Chiefs are going to win the game. I think the Patriots are going to cover, Adam. And there was a specific line that I was looking at that surprised me. The 3-0 Bills, they're only favored by 3 points against the Raiders in Vegas. What do you like for that game, Adam?
And you know I love both these teams. I love the Bills even more. You know, I think – and Buffalo's defense has not been great this year. I think that might be the reflection in the line. I love Buffalo. Josh Allen, respect him. He's an excellent player. Diggs is excellent. Sean McDermott, that coach culture. You know I'm high on the Raiders this year, Bob, but I think Buffalo can win that game. We'll win that game by a touchdown.
You know, the thing that bothered me the most this week, I thought you did an amazing job on Shine on Sports on Tuesday afternoon, laying it out there. People saying the Bills win against the Rams was tainted because of that 4th-and-7 penalty to save that game-winning drive by Allen. In the interception Allen threw at 28-10 was a complete joke, Adam. It was literally touchdown Seahawks. It was so bad. That changed the entire momentum of the game. The Rams came
100%.
Back. I think the Bills barely surviving the Rams. It's reflected in the line we're seeing. I love the Bills, too. I think they're going to beat the Raiders by at least 10 points this weekend.
Wait, by the way, as we're taping this at 1:57 on Tuesday, our good friend James Palmer from the NFL Network is reporting Brett Rypien is going to start for the Denver Broncos. if that's the case, then I'm out on my Broncos pick. I'm just throwing that out right now. If Brett Rypien is starting for the Denver Broncos, I am out, Bob, on that pick.
Classic Jets, Adam. The Jets are winning outright.
We will wrap up another sizzling episode of the Adam Schein Podcast right after this. Thanks for listening to another incredible episode of the Adam Schein Podcast. Mike Francesa, wow, incredible. Bob Stew, sensational. Justin Blasi, just amazing. Our incredible engineer. Thanks to our listeners on SiriusXM On Demand, our listeners on Pandora, listeners on Apple and with Stitcher. Hit the subscribe button, leave a review if you love the Adam Schein Podcast. You can always catch me every weekday on my radio show, Shine on Sports, which airs, of course, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio, Channel 82. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
This is the Adam Schein Podcast. Touchdown! For more from Adam Schein, listen to Shine on Sports on Mad Dog Sports Radio, 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio, Channel 82.